Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joined a couple days earlier because we're off Friday due to the NFL draft. Darren Dreger, always willing to make up his time. How are you today, Dregs?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
I don't know. We're having fun with everything that's gone on around here.
Yeah. Interesting night. Lots going on.
Yeah. What do you think? What's the bigger story for you? When you go to bed last night and you're thinking about everything that occurred, the Leafs losing game 7 and what happened in Vegas, what's the first thing you wake up saying, wow?
Well, I personally, as an insider, am more interested in what went on in Vegas between the Sharks and the Golden Knights. Just because that very scenario was discussed at the general manager's meetings in Boca in March. You know, the idea of the on-ice, the four on-ice officials having an opportunity when calling a major to quickly huddle, as they can do now, but more importantly, get a look at the replays that are available on a tablet at the timekeeper's box. So they couldn't add to a penalty if it was called a minor to change it into a major, but they could take away the major penalty, which was called last night to Eakin. So there's no doubt in my mind, had the officials been able to see the replay, that they wouldn't have called that major penalty. Now, that doesn't excuse the Vegas Golden Knights from giving up 4 goals on a penalty kill. Come on. Like, that's overshadowed by the major penalty called. So that whole scenario, given the fact that the general managers talked about it and decided that they didn't want another stop in play, they didn't want another delay, tells me that, yeah, maybe they should have reconsidered it. I guarantee you they will, and I'd be shocked if that replay scenario isn't introduced in time for next season. It doesn't have to be a coach's challenge. It just has to allow the on-ice officials to get another peek at it before administering a major call.
And not only that, Dregs, but usually if there is a call that warrants a 5-minute penalty, there is a delay because somebody is either hurt, laying on the ice. There is, you have, it's not going to slow down the game. Like Pavelski last night is on the ice. It takes them a while to get him off the ice. TJ Oshie is on the ice hurt. You have time to go to the penalty bench and just quickly look at it. Now, will they always get it right? No, but at least it closes the gap as to what we're seeing now.
Yeah, well, you had two veteran officials, who made the call. And, you know, obviously we don't have access to either official. But had they had the opportunity to further analyze, I think they would have seen that, it's a penalty. It's a cross-checking penalty. It's a minor penalty. But Pavelski was kind of standing awkwardly off balance, and then he was further nudged along by Paul Stastny, which probably, you know, encouraged him going back the way he did and smashing his head onto the ice. I mean, it was a horrendous play, and we all feel poorly for Joe Pavelski because he was seriously hurt on that play.
Yeah.
But the penalty, the major penalty, was a wrong call. And
Dregs, that's why I'm okay with the major penalty. I agree. Listen, I agreed with Marty with what they're saying in Fast Time. That's the only reason why I agree with the major penalty is the end result, and it's not in the rule book, and that's not a call. But all I'm saying is that in that particular case, when a guy does do something, Cody Eakin did not need. He doesn't. Why is he even doing that? Why is he even if it's
know.
A 2-minute penalty? That goal gives a huge lift to San Jose. And I guess my point is when a guy does go out of his way to make an aggressive play and almost be kind of try to be heroic as and be super tough on that faceoff, when it results in a guy like Joe Pavelski, you know, who's a clean player, he's a classy guy, he's a captain of a team, he's a good player in the league. And he's lying on the ice, and his—I don't know if his ear was bleeding or what—but he's out cold. That's the only reason why is just because of how the play resulted. I don't know if it's a 5-minute major or not, or if it would ever be viewed that way. But that's the only reason why I felt so strongly about it.
I understand that, and I appreciate that. And here's the other element to this too: it was 3-0 at the time, and I'm sure that the referees are looking at that play, going, "What is he doing?" And so they're trying to diffuse something that could have escalated into something more significant later in the hockey game, right? Like, as far as everyone is concerned, myself included, that game was over. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights are marching on to round two. So to see the cross-check in the moment, I went, uh-oh, this game is going to turn ugly in a hurry. And I'm guessing that that's what the official thought as well.
That's an interesting thought, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thought. But you're right, Dregs, you got to look at San Jose, at the Vegas Golden Knights and say, listen, how often has giving up four goals on a major penalty happened? Our buddy Johnny, Mike Johnson, said that he went on Twitter and the New York Islanders said it happened to them last year in a regular season game where they came back to win and scored four goals on a power play late in the third period. But that never happens. Would a guy, though, like Cody Eakin help? Because he played 2 minutes of shorthanded time and he probably could have been on the ice. So you've got him not being able to be on the PK and you've got Belmar, who was scratched, who's a penalty killer for Vegas. So that move alone would probably come back and haunt Jared Gallant from scratching Belmar in Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff happens. Given the scenario, there are lots of things that I'm sure everyone associated with that team, the Vegas Golden Knights, would have done differently. Those who were dressed and in play, who were assigned the penalty kill assignment, the coaching staff, of course, you can't make the prediction that you're going to be put in a wild scenario like this. Otherwise, you're right. Maybe you make different choices prior to the game. This is just one of those wild ones, weird ones, that I believe is going to facilitate change. And I do think that the general managers of the National Hockey League will take a look at giving the on-ice officials the opportunity to take something away via a quick look at the replay. And it's not going to happen in this playoff season, but it most definitely could be in play for the start of next year.
I would be okay with this. If the wording were done, if it were something along the lines of, and it goes for Fogel on Oshie, if a player uses his stick in any way and a player and results in injury, regardless of whether he cross-checks him, he falls to the ice and then slides into the boards and gets hurt, the result of the penalty is or the injury due to the penalty will determine how long the penalty is. You know,
well,
I mean,
and Petey, that's fair, but don't think for a second that seeing Pavelski on the ice after smashing his head on the ice and a pool of blood there didn't influence that call. Of course it did. That's human nature, and I fully, fully subscribe to that. I have no problem with it given the extent of the injury. And I think we also have to be careful here. I don't know how many major penalties are called over the course of the year. Not that many, to be fair. I'd be surprised, and I'm sure the data exists. It's probably less than 30. So I think we can live with an extra 30 seconds, 45 seconds a minute, whatever it is, 30 times a year for the officials to get it right. And if they look at it a second time and they say, you know what, it's borderline, but because we got a severe injury on the play, be it TJ Oshie or in this case Joe Pavelski, that warrants a major penalty and we're good with it. Then everybody else can just stick it because they've had the opportunity to get a second and a third look at it, and they still feel that way. Well, then it's everyone's opinion that it's a bad call, but I'd be comfortable with two veteran officials getting a second, third look and standing by that five-minute major.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so referee Dan O'Halloran was one that was on the ice last night in San Jose. He was also the referee when Zach Hyman interfered with Tuukka Rask, so I think he's probably on the hot seat a little bit. How about Toronto? Who's on the hot seat in Toronto? Is it Babcock? Is it Kadri? Is it
Gardner?
Gardner is going to be gone, so it doesn't matter. Is it Dubas? Who's on the hot seat in Toronto?
Well, today it's Mike Babcock, and I'm not. I don't subscribe to the theory that he's vulnerable in terms of likely being fired. You know, when they gave him the 8-year, $50 million deal, they knew that it was going to be challenging. They knew that it was going to be a marathon, not a sprint. So now they're through 4 years. I think that the Toronto Maple Leafs are a better team than they were a year ago, and that's what you have to look at when you're trying to assess and analyze progress. Of course it's gutting that they lost Game 7 to the Boston Bruins, and yet again they can't get by the Boston Bruins. But I didn't think that Freddie Anderson played as well in Game 7 as he did in Game 6. That's not on coaching. That's just the reality of a situation. Could you blame Mike Babcock for not having Austin Matthews on the ice in perhaps a turning point scenario where they're trying to claw back and whatnot? Yeah, of course, but that's a coaching decision. So you're going to fire him based on, you know, one game or one series? I think that you have to measure the body of the work. And I still believe that he's got great support from ownership, great support from Brendan Shanahan. Maybe not as much from Kyle Dubas, and I don't know that, but there are lots of, you know, kind of little seeds that have been planted over the course of their time together that suggest there could be a little bit of friction between the two. But I don't think that this is a decision that Kyle Dubas can make on his own. So for that reason, I think Babcock is safe.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Has there ever been any report or anything coming out of Toronto or the locker room just that players feud or don't get along with the coach? Because I said to Marty, I don't know, about 20 minutes ago, I said, you know, it's interesting because Babcock said something three or four times, and I'll say four, but for sure three times. He kept reminding everybody, and he said it last night on the NBC broadcast at the bench interview. He said, oh, we like each other, we want to be together. And I understand that those are things you say as you roll through the playoffs because, you know, your team bonds and you get closer. And it's a, but I just, for him to say it multiple times led me to just kind of just curious to know if maybe teammates didn't like each other, players don't like Babcock, any kind of disgruntled players in the locker room.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And if you look at the history of Mike Babcock, I can tell you, and this is with pure background and assurance, you know, Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg and some of the stars of the Detroit Red Wings, those great teams where they were either winning championships or vying for championships, they didn't like Mike Babcock. They didn't like him. But guess what? They played hard for him, and they played hard for each other. And I think that, you know, there are times when collectively they all get along and they're happy with Mike and Mike is happy with them. I think that, you know, he is excellent when it comes to pushing buttons, and maybe not every player appreciates that. And you guys know this because the game has changed considerably from when you guys played. You know, Petey, how many times did a coach try and step on you to try and get something more out of you? Well, you can't do that anymore with most young entry-level type of players. You just can't. They need communication. They need positive reinforcement. So maybe Babcock is going to have to adjust if what you say and what some of us believe is there. But I'm, you know, there's been speculation. It was more last year than it seems to be this year of a rift between Austin Matthews and Mike Babcock, which many believe is why he went to Arizona in the offseason to meet with Matthews and his family. I don't know that that exists. And if it does, so what? I mean, Austin Matthews is about to enter in a mega contract. He's paid to perform. He's not paid to get along with a coach. So I don't see coaching and the relationships as being a huge issue.
You say the Leafs, and Mike Babcock said it in his presser after the game last night, that the Leafs are a better team now than they were last year. Well, the stats and the storylines beg to differ. Last year, the Leafs had 105 points. This season, 100. Last year, they were up 4-3 in the third period in Game 7 and had a major collapse. This year, really, were not at all in Game 7, a little bit at 2-1. But so, you know, they added Tavares, and they've got a, you know, a better Mitch Marner. Willie Nylander was not anywhere near where he can be, I think. But where else could the Leafs say we were that much better this year than last season?
Well, I mean, you just nailed it. You know, adding John Tavares, I mean, statistics aside, of course, the argument ends because, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't develop the same, you know, production level in terms of wins as they did last year. But on paper, I mean, come on, of course they're better. They're better with John Tavares than they were a year ago. You know, Mitch Marner had a career year, 94 points. He's better. Austin Matthews in this playoff run was much better than he was last year. Last year he didn't do anything in round one. So I think individually,
they found
better,
a player in Kapanen.
Well, yeah, and you know, we don't know what Andreas Janssen is going to be. I don't know. I mean, I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs blue line, and of course they're going to lose Jake Gardner to free agency, but Travis Dermott looks like he's going to be a nice player developing. We didn't know a whole hell of a lot about Travis Dermott a year ago. So there's lots of individual pieces that are better. And again, you guys know this from past experience. Sometimes you got to learn how to lose and suffer and go through the pain of being tossed yet again in round one of the playoffs before you can figure out how hard it is to win. And I think individually those players have to go through that. And I do think that collectively as a team they're better, even though wins, losses doesn't identify that.
Yep, born loser right here, still looking for my first win, Dregs. Darren Dreger on the line here, TSN Hockey Insider, joins us on the Instigators every Friday, 11:30, kind enough to join us today because we're off Friday due to the NFL draft. He's at Darren Dreger on Twitter. You should give him a follow. I had a theory, Dregs, after the Kadri suspension. I said if the Leafs win, they will trade him because they believe they can win without him. And if they lose, they will trade him because they will say that the undisciplined play cost them. They needed that third line centerman, that lockdown guy. Put Nylander in a tough spot. I said Kapanen earlier, but it was Nylander. So you know, I mean, I say to myself, you know, is it over for Kadri in Toronto?
Well, I can understand why you go there, and the truth is, Nazem Kadri struggled in his role as a third line center, and I don't know if it's because he feels like, you know, he's better than that. He should at least be a number two center. You know, whether or not he even though there have been times in his career under Babcock, especially, where he's embraced that shutdown role and he's flourished offensively in that role as well. Yet this year, things didn't materialize for him. I mean, he's got some soul searching. You know, he's one of those players that he's at his best when he's playing to the line, but you can't cross the line the way that he has. I mean, his rap sheet is ugly. He's known now, his reputation is that of being a dirty player. And that's unfortunate because Nazem Kadri is an excellent NHL player and a lot of teams would love to have him. So there's a decision that has to make. Mitch Marner's going to make $11 million or more. Yeah, I mean, that's just
from
the reality.
Toronto?
Well, I mean, if Toronto wants to keep Mitch Marner, that's what they're going to have to pay him to keep him. And if that's the case, and I don't doubt for a second they want to keep Mitch Marner, then it's coming at somebody else's expense. And it's not just, you know, your pending unrestricted free agents like Jake Gardner. You know, has William Nylander played his last game as a Maple Leaf? Maybe. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to acquire cap space. And it's probably not going to be just one player. So do you move out William Nylander? Do you move out a Kapanen or an Andreas Janssen to avoid the threat of an offer sheet? Do you consider trading Nazem Kadri? I mean, I think all bets are off because Toronto is in a place very soon here where they are going to have no choice. They've got to move assets out to make room for Marner and others.
Dregs, I'm going to ask you a mini this or that over here. Which one is the better offer in the offseason? Is it Mitch Marner for a team to offer sheet Marner as an RFA, or is it to go after Panarin as a UFA? Well, for about the same money, I would think, because Panarin and the UFA market is going to demand a lot. So which one is the better offer, and which one's the better guy to go after?
Ooh, that's a zinger.
Well, yeah, the better guy for me is Marner because I love his creativity. I love how he makes those around him better. I mean, Johnny Tavares doesn't have the year that he had unless he's playing with Mitch Marner. I mean, come on.
Yep.
But if I could put my GM cap on for a second, if you're offer sheeting a player, I mean, you're giving up a boatload. You're giving up four first-round draft picks.
Yep.
You know, and in Artemi Panarin, you're getting a world-class player, but you don't have to give up the assets. You just have to give up the cash and the term commitment to get that done. So if you're a building team, then Panarin makes more sense than Marner. But from a player perspective, I think Marner makes your team better.
Panarin turns 28 on October 30th, and Marner turns 22. We share the same birthday on May 5th. So one, you know, you're getting, you know, one's a lot younger. I don't know how much youth, you know, plays into that decision, but that's an interesting one, Marty.
Here's the other thing, guys, that people forget about. I'd be shocked if Mitch Marner signs a deal with the Maple Leafs before July 2nd. And that's only, well, the only way he signs it is if Kyle Dubas puts an $11 million annual average salary offer or 11.5 matching Matthews on the table. That's going to make the Marner camp stop and think about it. But don't forget, there's that interview window, right? And we always associate it with unrestricted free agents. And it's always the last week, what is it, around June 25th, right? It also applies to restricted free agents. Why wouldn't you line up to talk to Marner or his people late June to find out if this kid is legitimately interested in an offer sheet? Why wouldn't you?
No, that's a good point. Like, at least do your due diligence. Yeah. And even if it's to kick the tire, because people don't always understand this, but Marner and his clan has to accept an offer sheet. So if you're, let's see, the Buffalo Sabres, and you meet with Marner on June 27th and you talk to him and you get the feeling that he's not going to want to sign an offer sheet with your team, then you can just forget about
move
it and
on.
And move on and get somebody else on July 1st.
Agreed.
So that is a fantastic point, Dregs, that you're making.
Dregs, are you sitting down?
Yeah, I'm in my truck. All is good.
Brace yourself for this next question.
Uh-oh.
Any updates on Sabres coach or Jeff Skinner? Or what?
I knew that's where we were going. Well, I'll keep it short and sweet because my guess is we're probably running out of time. Nothing new on Skinner. Status quo there. And more or less the same on the coaching front. Although, and this isn't a news flash because it's been speculated, I'm told that Jacques Martin is a top candidate in Buffalo.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he might be among them. You know, there's been speculation on Todd Richards, although, you know, a couple of days ago I got the sense that, Todd Richards is of interest and he's certainly a candidate, but, you know, things weren't heating up there. Now, maybe it's changed in the last 24 hours. I don't know that, but yesterday I was told that Jacques is, he's considered a top candidate, so we'll see.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well, there's the connection with Pittsburgh, obviously, and Jason Botterill, but also an experienced coach at the National Hockey League level. And, a structured coach. If you remember Jacques Martin, his coach with, the Ottawa Senators, it was very structured there. So would be interesting to see how that plays out. Well, please keep tabs on the Skinner thing, too, because I know that now with Marner, you know, out of the playoffs, that conversation is going to get going. But we want updates on Jeff Skinner.
I understand. But you know what happens? We're at a point now where when I ask my Buffalo sources about the negotiation, you know what I get back? Have you seen, you guys have all used the emoji with the hand and the middle finger raised?
No, I have not. This is
Craig Rivet's favorite emoji that he sends out.
Well, it's becoming a favorite of my Buffalo sources as well.
Well, you know what? If you want to, you can share your sources with us, and we will also be asking and see if we get the same response.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, hey, Dregs, your Buffalo source just texted me and gave you the middle finger emoji too.
Hey, what's next for you, Dregs, now that no Canadian teams are in, and what are you covering?
Well, I'll be in studio tomorrow, I'm sure, because the Toronto Maple Leafs clean-out is tomorrow, so there'll be a full post-mortem today and tomorrow, in fact. But what's up next for me? I'm going to Košice, Slovakia on May 7th, and I'll tell you what, fellas. I mean, Hockey Canada, Team Canada, they're struggling right now trying to put together a quality team. Now, in the end, they're going to put together a quality team, but they're having a bit of a struggle there getting players to commit. Team USA looked rock solid.
Yeah, they do.
I'm looking forward to it.
Where does this one rank in terms of location for World Championships? Because we had this discussion about you the other day, and Crosby turned it down, and Marty's like, well, it's not the most desired place to go. I'm like, wait a minute, is it not?
Yeah, it isn't. Bratislava, where the other side is playing, is beautiful. Off the charts nice, and that's where the medal round will play out. But Košice is small, from what I'm told. I've talked to people who have spent time there, played there, all of those things. It's fine. It's nice. It's, you know, it's the European city. How bad can it be? Everybody complained about Herning last year. And you ask the American boys, and they had the same experience I did. It was all good. So
it's not
I'm
Paris.
Not gonna do any
it's not Paris. I wanted to get the Dreger Cafe, and now we'll have to find out what cafe is in Slovakian. And maybe you can have a sit down with our old buddy Miro Chetan over there,
Yeah. I'll tell you. How about this one? So the original Dreger Cafe was based on a sit-down interview with Mike Babcock and Kenny Holland in Prague 5 years ago. Mike Babcock could make his fifth straight appearance in the Dreger Cafe at the World Championship.
Well, the first year they didn't make the playoffs and three straight first-round exits for the Leafs. So, he's a customer. That's when you ask Kenny Holland and Mike Babcock their relationship and about Babcock being a UFA coach at the time.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was good work there, Dregs, and the Dreger Cafe lives on.
Hey, Dregs, so was this the pain Babcock was talking about? Like still 3-4 years down the road, he's like, you know there's going to be pain coming.
Hey, you know what? They got real good players, and they're a real good team, and we knew we'd have to suffer and go through some pain, but that's all right. The sun woke up this morning, and we're all good.
Do you know who's asking about you right now?
No one.
Everybody, Dregs. Everybody's asking about you right now. Dregs, thank you so much for your time. Awesome as always. We will talk to you next Friday.
Okay, boys. Sounds good.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.